Medicare supplement, you may save money and keep the same benefits with a different company. Call 893-0296 or at Walt Lucas, L-U-C-A-S, at sunset.net for a free consultation. Stress less, live better, Walter Lucas Insurance. And by Mountain Sports, providing outdoor clothing and equipment for hiking, cross-country skiing, camping, and just enjoying the great outdoors. Mountain Sports is located in downtown Chico at 176 East 3rd Street. Their telephone number is 345-5011. You're going to be hearing It's Your Body. My name is Chris, and I am subbing tonight for It's Your Body, and I'm very, very happy to be with you. This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Let's start off with a little bit of music, and I'll be back with you in just a moment.
South of all the best, but I only love to go there as a guest, cause I love being here with you. I love the sea, I love the shore, I love the rocks, and what is more, with you there'd never be a bore, cause I love being here with you. Singing in the shower, laughing by the hour, love is such a crazy game, love all kinds of weather as long as we're together. I love to hear you say my name, I love good wine, fine cuisine, candlelight, I love the scene, but baby, if you know just what I mean, love being here with you. Thank you.
They just wound up, let it go. I love a thrill, a Paris show. I love to kiss you on your nose. Just let me say before I close, I love to hear you with you.
And I do love being here with you, and so appreciative to be able to fill in tonight on this show. I am having trouble finding my guest, though. I think I've got her telephone number wrong. So anyway, our guest tonight, if we're able to get her, is Dr. Catherine Page. She's the president of the Fetal Alcohol Spectrum Disorder, NORCAL, and past clinic director of the Fetal Alcohol Spectrum Disorder Diagnostic Clinic in Santa Clara County. Former school psychologist, now working to bring awareness and resources to Northern California. She also is the mom of a 35-year-old who's been living with fetal alcohol, a young man she adopted from South America. And so she is living throughout a child's entire life with somebody with fetal alcohol. So she brings a lot of personal experience to it also. So I'm hoping we'll get her on the line. And if we don't, then I will just launch on talking about fetal alcohol without any notes, because this is something I was involved with when I was working as a public health nurse for Butte County. And, but it wouldn't be as good as an expert who's working with it every day. So let's listen to another song, and then hopefully I'll be able to catch up with her. And I do apologize for not having our guest, but stay tuned, as I say. Here we go.
Of stone, the pull and the tug of forces still not understood. I am leaning toward the good. I'm leaning toward the good. I lay down my armor and I set my shield. The only way across is unguarded and revealed. Each step takes me further than I ever thought I could. I'm leaning toward the good.
Erica Lockett. Kathy Page, are you on the line?
I am.
Oh, boy. Thank goodness. And I'm so grateful to have you on. I introduced you already, and so we can just go ahead with some of my questions, which is, you know, a lot of us have heard about fetal alcohol syndrome, but what's fetal alcohol spectrum disorder?
That is a great question to start with. Fetal alcohol spectrum disorder is the whole array of issues that can happen when there's damage from prenatal alcohol, and it affects roughly between 4 and 5% of us, they're now figuring. Just a very tiny percent have fetal alcohol syndrome, which is where you have those recognizable facial features that most people have been taught about. They know FAS, but they don't know that it's a whole spectrum of mostly normal-looking people with normal IQs, but just problems in doing life.
When you say doing life, what does that mean?
Well, part of the brain that takes the biggest hit with prenatal alcohol is the corpus callosum, which is the part that lets the two sides talk to each other. So, for example, language on the left, action on the right. One part of doing life is the ability to tell the truth.
Mm-hmm.
This is just one tiny example of what I mean by doing life, but it's something that's not uncommon with people that with fetal alcohol damage, is that there's a difficulty telling truth from fiction, and a lot of what's aggravates other people is the inability to tell the truth about what happened or what somebody's thinking or what their motives might be. But it really ranges far and wide, the trouble doing life, keeping track of time and money and relationships is really difficult, keeping attention deficit disorder being the most common cluster of symptoms of fetal alcohol. Gosh, I could go on for weeks about this. Just tell me when to stop.
No, it's okay. Go ahead.
I'll just get to the outcome. If this disability isn't recognized or at least hypothesized early on and intervened with appropriately, we wind up with people in chronic trouble with the law, in and out of jail, children being removed, lots of substance abuse, difficulty holding on to jobs and relationships, and 80% of people are in the oldest, longest study shown to be unable to live independently. 80% of the people with fetal alcohol damage they're couch surfing or they're being supported by somebody else, but actually paying the rent. It just requires too much ability to get things done and do what they're supposed to do and be there on time and remember what day of the month it is. So that's what happens if it's not recognized as a disability early on. And so everybody's mad at the person that has it because they're promising things that they don't come through with, and then they lie about, it's not an endearing personality, combination of personality traits for the most part. And so the ones that are recognized as having a disability early on really can get surrounded by the kind of support that makes those outcomes less likely.
And, I think that, just to back up a little bit, I think that probably our audience now are going, oh, my God, I wonder if I hurt my baby. What is the, how much alcohol is too much, and at what part of pregnancy do we harm our fetuses the worst if we're drinking alcohol?
It's not the uncomplicated answer that we would wish. As I'm hearing the research now, what happens at the beginning of the pregnancy is that the blueprint is laid down. The migrating cells go to where they're supposed to go according to plan, and then later on in the pregnancy, the brain growth comes up off of that blueprint. And so if the alcohol or the damage occurs in the beginning, you're going to have a wonky blueprint, and then what grows on top of that is going to be in the wrong place. And so very often what happens is in the real early pregnancy, when the heart forms, if that part has been if there's been impaired cell migration, what it's called, where the cells go to the wrong place and the heart isn't put together right, then miscarriage happens. Because if it's not a viable fetus, then, you know, out it goes. But in the second and third trimesters, what you're getting is the nerves are insulating themselves. They're making connections, and the volume of the different brain parts is it's just built up on. So what you might have if you're only drinking in your third trimester is somebody who's all the brain parts are kind of laid out right, but there's not enough brain, there's not enough brain cells in some places to really do an adequate job. So that's a really long way of saying the part about the timing, and the part about how much does it take to do damage is has an equally wordy answer, I'm sorry to say, and it is it depends so much on the individual mom and the individual fetus, to the point that what you can have fraternal twins and one takes a big hit and the other doesn't. So it's just there are some things that are not understood well yet. There are a few things that are coming clear, like some people are protected from the effects of prenatal alcohol by a mutation, genetic mutation, an allele that makes it so, you know, the other fraternal twin just bounces along doing fine in school and friends and job, and the first one is kind of limping along, getting into trouble, and feeling something's wrong with him.
You know, I think for me, as somebody who sees women in the clinic sometimes, that the biggest worry for a well woman would be the time between her period, I mean, between conception and that for then the missed period, when the few days after the missed period when somebody comes in to see if they're pregnant. So maybe that first 2 to 3 weeks, is that a, you were talking about the blueprint before. Mm-hmm. Would how worried should women be if they were binging?
Well, you know, the exact research on that, I can't put my finger on in my head right now, and I may never have read any, but my understanding is that there is a kind of grace period of about 11 days to 2 weeks after conception.
Hmm. Okay.
Before, as it's been called, the conceptus attaches.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
At that point, there's no alcohol coming through to that little human to be.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a little bit of a grace period, and then if there is a lot of damage, if there was a binge after that, and there was a lot of damage, then so often that results in miscarriage.
Mm. Okay. Hmm. Okay, so that's a little clearer. I just didn't want to scare people, you know, because
yeah,
it's such a common thing in our community, a college community, where, you know, where people drink socially quite a bit. So I hope that that's helpful to people. But in terms of...
Can I ask you before you go on?
Sure.
I had a question about that.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the college-age women... you know, they're probably having sex and drinking, but I'm imagining that they're using birth control, and if they're not, then abortions are pretty accessible.
Yeah.
So it's just a guess. So I'm asking you, knowing Chico as you do, are there many pregnancies coming out of college age girls?
Well, I think that, you know, that's variable too, because a lot of women aren't at a place in their lives where they want to be pregnant, so, you know, the abortion rates are kind of high, but sometimes there's a lot of people who aren't college students that I see, and a lot of people are anti-abortion, and they mm-hmm. would carry to term regardless of any fetal defect, because they don't really understand you know, especially in a first pregnancy, if you haven't been a mom before, you can't understand what a birth defect like fetal alcohol spectrum disorder could mean to not only you, but to your life and all those around you. And so they don't understand the seriousness of it. And that's been one of my concerns, is that, you know, we were so happy when the state of California and other states started to post warnings about fetal alcohol in bars. And you see the warnings everywhere, but now nobody actually sees them. They don't pay attention to it. And I'm afraid it's something that people are going to disregard, because it isn't being really focused on the way it should be about the dangers. And how dangerous is it? Like, what happens? You talked about this part of the brain called the corpus callosum, and that the left and the right side of the brain can't really communicate very well. But what else happens to the brain, and what other disabilities might that child have?
Well, there's a new way of looking at it that kind of simplifies it down into three basic categories. Let's see if I can remember them. One is self-regulation, where the ability to kind of roll with the punches and not be melting down mm-hmm. all the time, or if something does upset you, you know, the ability to soothe yourself is impaired. It's like the nerves are always raw of this little kid and then adult. So there's always upset going on in that person's mind and body. So that's the sort of, you know, self-regulatory part that is upset by prenatal alcohol a lot. Another huge category is executive functioning, and that is the ability to make good decisions. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't kick in really until you're about three, or at least it doesn't kick in to the extent that you can really measure it until a person's two or three. So sometimes you have a baby and the baby's looking fine, sleeping okay, eating okay, moving fine, but it's not until they're a toddler that you start to see this kiddo keeps, you know, that old thing about once burned, twice shy. You put your hand on the stove and then you don't do it again. Mm-hmm. But these guys don't learn from those consequences.
No.
So making your way in the world successfully means, you know, we're always learning by, better not do that, something bad happened. And so those connections they're broken, they're impaired.
So very accident prone and sensory, not a lot of sensory problems.
Yeah, which is kind of in a little different category. The executive functioning one is where is more cognitive, where you just kind of can't put two and two together.
Mm-hmm.
You can't figure out, this is too risky, or yeah, I don't get my my prize today because I didn't turn in my homework. That if then because part is often impaired. So everything is just upsetting. What do you mean I don't get my prize? That's not fair. And then major meltdown, major rage sometimes. And the third area is, I think it's the one that includes the sensory stuff, which of course has a big overlap with autism, in that upset and disorganization can occur inside when the lights are too bright, or a sound is too loud, or you're in too busy a place, or the tags on the back of the shirts bug you. That kind of thing can add to that, you know, that tremendous upset all the time, which of course all adds up to, it's really hard to calmly engage in learning stuff,
right,
or to calmly engage in, you know, conversation.
Right.
Yeah.
I think you've painted the picture there, and because our time is limited, I want to just tell people that tomorrow is an important day internationally, is that on the ninth day of the ninth month, we try around the world to acknowledge the seriousness of this problem and to get this kind of information out to women so that they can, by the simple act of not drinking or contracepting, if they're going to drink, they can protect their children, and themselves and from this terrible thing. Are there celebrations, or what's going on by you?
Nothing is going on by us now. We got a proclamation from the California State Senate confirming tomorrow as Fetal Alcohol Awareness Day, and then one from Santa Clara County Board of Supervisors, but we're not having any big deals this year. Hopefully we'll plan a little bit better next year. Can I tell you one thing that they're doing in Alaska?
Yes, of course.
Okay. They got the legislator to kick loose $500,000 to do a pilot putting, you might have seen this, Chris, putting free pregnancy test dispensers in the women's bathrooms in bars.
Wow.
Along with information about why, you know, why might it be good to know?
But anyway, the whole thing with timing, I think, can be really confusing in terms of pregnancy tests.
Really?
Well, they don't show pregnancy until you have some of the hormone of pregnancy, and that takes about 10 days after conception, so it doesn't really totally help you, but I think it's a step in the right direction in terms of women's empowerment and them being able to take control of their situation, and if they're able to use that and then go to the next step.
And
they have access to care. Now there's a medical abortion procedure that you have to be a little further along, but it is an option, so that we have both the what they call surgical, which isn't really surgical, but just a simple office procedure, and then one that where a woman can abort at home. So if that's kind of where you were going with that, it is available in California, but many states in the country have terrible access to care issues. But I've only got like a minute left with you, Kathy.
Okay.
And I want to ask you, if a person wants more information, because we're just barely prying the lid loose on this, how can somebody find out more?
Yeah, there's our website. It's FASDNorCal.org.
Okay. And that's a good one.
That has a bunch of resources on it and further links to go elsewhere. I want to circle back. I wasn't going to, go get an abortion if you find out you're pregnant. I was going to, do you want to think about, drinking less? Less or not at all? And I wanted to ask you if there's help in Chico for a woman who wants to quit drinking. Is it easier to get help if you're pregnant?
Well, I don't know that as much now because I'm not doing public health nursing. But at one point, we had a grant, and we were screening all prenatal women to see if women were at risk of using alcohol during pregnancy. And then there were referral pathways, and I'm not really sure if those exist now or if the obstetricians and midwives are actually doing the screening. I bet the midwives are. But I don't really know that anymore. But I do want to give a shout out to the morning after pill, which is widely available and over the counter. So if a woman has been drinking and she recognizes that she hasn't been contracepting, she can use an effective method so that she doesn't have a pregnancy. So that's another really important thing for women to consider.
Great.
Yeah. But great. I got to let you go. So once again, give us the link to how we find you, the information.
Yeah, www.fasdnorcal.org.
Thank you, Dr. Catherine Page, for being with us tonight on It's Your Body. We really appreciate you.
Thanks so much, Chris. See you soon.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, so I want to thank our underwriters, too. I didn't get through all of our underwriters, so I just want to thank Butte Views, I mean, It's Your Body is made possible by Friends of the Arts, a state local partner to the California Arts Council. Since 2001, Friends of the Arts have been creating economic opportunity through arts and culture by producing community festival and events including Artoberfest, Chico Palio, the True North Tour, the Silent Film Festival, the NorCal Jazz Festival, the Salmon Festival, and more. To learn about Friends of the Arts, visit friendsoftheartsupstate.org. And by AgMart Gardening Supply Center, offering a complete line of hydroponic and organic gardening supplies for all season indoor and outdoor growing needs. AgMart is now open 7 days a week at 194 East 17th Street in Chico between Park and Locust Avenues, and the telephone number is 342-MART. So in the studio with me, I have a friend who is an acupuncturist, and she is also a the owner of her own business, and it is Chico Community Acupuncture. Our guest tonight is Olivia Peters-Lazaro, kind of sitting there in the dark, so come up closer to your microphone there, Olivia, and thank you for being with us here on KZFR on It's Your Body. I really appreciate you coming in.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and so you became an acupuncturist. I know your dad, I hope I'm not giving away anything here, but your dad is a GYN, OBGYN. So what made you become an acupuncturist?
I had known about acupuncture since I was a kid. My mom used it for my brother who had Crohn's disease, so I was aware of it. And I got done with my undergraduate degree, and it kind of just flew. Acupuncture is based on Taoism, and Taoism was something that I learned about as a kid throughout my life, and it's the observation of the body and how it is in balance or out of balance, and that kind of fit with my ecology, geography background, and kind of mapping our health on our body and assessing our bodies from the dynamic of a whole ecosystem and how we can help to balance it and make it feel better.
One of the amazing things about you that I just want to say, now I've already given away part of your life that probably wasn't mine to give away, but you studied acupuncture in Havana, Cuba. So you had to learn Spanish? No, you're shaking your head now.
So I studied in Havana, Cuba as an undergraduate. So I learned Spanish there.
Okay.
And I use Spanish regularly in my practice, which is so much fun. But no, I went to China and studied acupuncture in China. Yeah.
Okay.
So during acupuncture school, I spent a period of time in the hospitals in China and studied there.
So. Did you have to know Chinese languages?
No. My teachers in acupuncture school, many of them were Chinese and taught a lot of our terminology in Mandarin. And so when I got to China, I was able to, you know, get around based on basic up, down, left, right, colors, flavors, sounds, smells of Chinese, of Mandarin that we were learning.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah,
so that is so amazing. So I wanted to ask you, because I think there's a lot of confusion about Chinese medicine, like how it's a totally different system than what we call allopathic medicine, which is the Western medicine that the doctors here practice. And you, as a doctor of acupuncture, Chinese medicine, what is the basis of acupuncture? Where is it coming from in terms of the Chinese traditions?
That's a good question. I don't know. I don't know how to answer that. It's old. You know, they attribute timelines like 2,000 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Our medical texts are ancient texts of China. One of the reasons that I think Chinese medicine has come through in our culture versus like other native medicines or indigenous medicines or traditional medicines is that the Chinese culture had a written culture to it, and so they have long histories of written texts, and that included their medical systems. Like I mentioned, it being based on Taoism, I think a lot of it was developed in deep meditation and observation and sensitivity to our bodies, and being attuned to what's going on in a person's body. They were able to treat for diabetes. Before we had, you know, urine analysis to test for these things and blood tests for these things, they were just looked at a person's urine and saw that the ants were really attracted to it. They'd have people pee on rocks. This is just an anecdote, but and the ants would eat the urine that had sugars being spilled from it, and then they were able to look at that person's symptomology and use acupuncture points and stimulation and herbal medicine to right that imbalance.
It's sort of just putting things together in a way of observation mm-hmm. and sensitivity.
Yeah, it's a very much a holistic medicine. So
yeah. So one of the things you were interested in talking about tonight, and I really support this because I was just kind of thinking about, well, let's talk about cramps and headaches. You were going to just mention to us a little bit about seasonality and mm-hmm. Talking about health during this season. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us what
you meant? So Chinese medicine in many ways fundamentally is based on the five elements. And each, so we have fire, earth, water, metal, and wood. Mm. And each of those elements is associated with the season. And right now we're in the fall season, and that's associated with the metal element. And the metal element is associated with our lungs and our large intestine. And in a basic way, our lungs have to do with inspiration. They inhale, of course, but they're also your connection to the divine. And that sense of awe that we have, that you inhale and you are refreshed and present in your life. So that's that quality of the lungs. And when the lungs become out of balance, their quality has to do with grief and crying and sorrow and rigidity. If you're not kind of having that sort of bigger perspective of divine awe, you can get a little rigid and pigeonholed in your dealing on this planet. And then the large intestine, it's paired organ, we say in Chinese medicine, and we're not specifically, literally talking about your large intestine, but kind of we are, but a metaphorical Chinese large intestine has to do with your ability to release what no longer serves you. So obviously that's your bowels, that's the waste material of our bodies. And so, yeah, you have those two polarities of the inspiration and then the defecation and the releasing of waste products on the other end. You take your first breath and you take your last breath, and your bowels are a part of that as well. So
that's really fascinating. It's like you know, how the body and the spirit sort of are linked. Mm-hmm. And it's really true that they are, because mm-hmm. if you're just freaking out and uptight, not really paying attention, you're eating bad, your bowels aren't working, your lungs are tight, your shoulders are tight, mm-hmm. your neck is tight, everything's off with you. Mm-hmm. So when you diagnose somebody, like when I come to your clinic and you take my pulse mm-hmm. and look at my tongue, what are you looking for?
Yeah, great question. So your pulses are reflective of all of your internal organ systems, and we're feeling the radial pulse on both wrists in three positions and three different depths. And I'm looking for the quality of your pulse. And we're taught certain qualities like wiry or slippery or full or shallow or superficial or forceful or deep or quiet. So it might be fun for your listeners to even take their three middle fingers and put their hands on their radial pulse, so down from your thumb, and just kind of feel different qualities in your pulse. And it's fun to check out your own pulse and just have a little, you know, own biofeedback in that way to see what your body's doing. You'll notice changes throughout the month and day of what your pulse does. Of course, our hearts are reactive to the world we're in. So that gives me some information about what's going on with a person. And then the tongue is a really good and simple snapshot, again, of, it's like a mirror of your body. And so each part of the tongue is reflective of different organ systems, again, or different balances of heat or cold or moisture or dryness or upper or lower in the body. So, yeah, if the tip of your tongue is very red, I might ask a person if they have insomnia or anxiety or high blood pressure. If the sides are highly scalloped, the person might have weaknesses in their digestive system or fatigue. If a person's, you know, so those are two basic things. Again, people can stick their tongues out at home and look in the mirror and check that out. And that's significant because if a person comes in, say, for a migraine headache, so whereas in Western medicine, you might diagnose migraine headache. In Chinese medicine, the diagnosis could be, you know, five or six different things, and that migraine headache, based on their other suite of symptoms, say it's related to your menstrual cycle, or say I have high blood pressure, or I'm also dizzy with my migraine, or I have insomnia, or I'm getting hot flashes, or my neck is out and I get migraines. You know, whatever it is, that other suite of symptoms will tell me a more specific diagnosis for that person, and the tongue and pulse help refine that diagnosis.
Again, that's fascinating. It's so interesting. So you started, before I think I interrupted you or sidetracked you, you were going to talk a little bit about this season and how can we keep ourselves healthy under this mm-hmm. kind of thinking.
Yeah, so the autumn is the driest time of the year because we're at the end of summer and our rain has not yet come here in the, you know, the northern hemisphere, in this Mediterranean climate. And so our lungs don't like dryness. And yeah, it's very hard on our lungs. And in Chico right now, we're having fires and really bad air quality. So a lot of people are coming in with exacerbated allergies, dry sinuses, aching sinuses, just like a cough in the lungs that's dry, but there's a little bit of phlegm, things like that. So, I mean, a really simple thing that I often recommend for that kind of dry, irritated lung condition is 100% pear juice. So with no grape juice added to it, just pear juice is really good for moistening the lungs. It's a good time of year to just notice if you're having any sort of grief things coming up, that it's a really natural time to look at those things and then let them go. But that moistening of the lungs is a really positive thing to do. Also at this time of year, we're going into the winter and you actually prepare for in the season you're in, you prepare for the next season. And so right now you start kind of, you want to follow that going in, that darkening phase that we're about to go into in the wintertime. In the wintertime is the time of water and the kidneys. And your kidneys are your deep energy stores. So just another kind of simple dietary thing. You start eating foods that are a little bit denser, less of all of your fresh sprouts that you were eating in the spring. And you start turning towards soups and your squashes and you know, really just your seasonal produce that is morphing as we go forward.
So eating local and in season.
And in season, yeah.
That's the best.
It's a really simple way to be in tune with the season.
Yeah, so, you know, any of our listeners who don't know about the farmers markets, a lot of people, if you buy things at the store, you don't really get the full taste, whereas things that are freshly picked a lot of times will be much more delicious. And so shopping at farmers markets in Chico on Saturday mornings or tonight, Thursday night, or Wednesdays over at the old mall, there's farmers markets, highly recommended. But so, you know, I was going to ask you about a couple of women's health issues. Mm-hmm. You mentioned migraine headaches, but I think for women who are in their reproductive years, one of the big ones is cramps and their whole feeling. It can really mess up somebody for a number of days around their periods. And what do you recommend for keeping people kind of more stable through that period?
Yeah, in general, acupuncture does a great job of regulating the endocrine system. Mm-hmm. So that's applicable for so many of the you know, the internal diseases that people come across. And so that applies, of course, to regulating our menstrual cycle, including bad cramps or tender breasts or migraines associated with your menstrual cycle or, you know, early or late periods. And so acupuncture, again, for so many of the issues we treat, we really like to treat preventatively. So when a person's not having the cramps, or the person maybe has chronic back pain, but we like to treat them, you know, once a month, so that we maintain the wellness of their back, maintain the circulation through that part of their body, and not just when that all the muscles tense up and cause worse back pain. But anyway, so we like to treat people preventatively and when they're having an issue. And so with something like cramps, you know, if you're right at your period and having cramps, certainly getting treated with acupuncture will use specific points on the body that go to the uterus and help calm and soothe it. And also, you know, so sometimes cramps can be associated with a really light menstrual flow. Sometimes they can be associated with very heavy or very clotty menstrual flow. And so, again, those are important pieces of information. And when I'm choosing what points to use on someone, we want to know about the quality of their blood, and I'm able to assess that, you know, both from asking and then again from the pulses and the tongue, let me know kind of the state of their blood. And again, this is kind of from more of a Chinese point of view, but there's certainly corollaries with strict Western science and terminology. So yeah, we like to treat them, you know, once a week, and hopefully that when they get their period, they won't have as bad of cramps.
So would you say if you have a chronic health problem, like cramps or frequent bladder infections or frequent vaginal infections, mm-hmm. then it might be good to go weekly mm-hmm. for acupuncture until you stabilize it, and then every month to kind of head it off?
Yes.
With the
past. So typically the worse something is and the longer, so the worse something is, the more frequent you should come in. Think, you know, if you're in debilitating pain or that bladder infection has flared up, come in more often, 2 or 3 times a week. And then once there's a really good shift in that pattern, whatever is going on, then yes, we reduce frequency. And one of the fun tests to do is after getting a handful of treatments, you know, 6 to 8 treatments for whatever is going on, you know, people will not come for a couple weeks, and they'll either be like, wow, I did great, awesome, or they'll be like, oh yeah, I kind of slipped back. Like, I started feeling that achy pressure burning in my bladder when I went to the bathroom. Or acupuncture is actually very, very effective for treating interstitial cystitis.
Right.
And so yeah, there's a lot of feedback mechanisms that I try to educate patients on so that they're paying attention to their bodies and they learn mm-hmm. how to use acupuncture for their best benefit.
Now, you have a different model of practice than most acupuncturists in private practice. Can you tell us about community acupuncture?
Yeah, so Chico community acupuncture is based on the idea that if we do this business model with a sliding scale in a large treatment space with, you know, 8 to 10 recliner chairs, that we can make it affordable for people to come in as often as they want to. That communal treatment space, I think my patients feel it. I know I do. Has a real synergy to people's healing. It's a powerful statement to be in a room with people who are choosing to take time out of their day to put their money towards this particular thing and get help and feel better. And I think it's empowering for people to see other individuals getting care, and it takes healing or disease or chronic pain or grief and loss and anxiety and depression out of isolation and puts us all together. People don't know what people are in there for, but I think it's really nice that yeah. people get treated together. And again, it makes it affordable so that they can come and get treated on a regular basis.
Right. And in our time too, the relaxation that you experience mm-hmm. there is also really therapeutic, because
right.
a lot of people just never slow down.
Yes.
And
yeah.
it's a really good thing for that.
Yep.
Before you ask, I want to ask you at the end about how people would learn more about your particular business, but I wanted to ask you about some more problems, because mm-hmm. I know that it's been hard for acupuncture to really establish itself in within the complementary medicine format, and now it's much more acceptable. Like, they do it at the cancer center, mm-hmm. they have acupuncture there. But I know that one of the things that's definitely been proven effective for is for addictions.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a little bit about why would acupuncture work with addictions and how that works?
Yeah. I mean, lots of really interesting research is being done on acupuncture. One of the basic ways that acupuncture works is by putting you into your parasympathetic nervous system, so taking you out of your fight and flight sympathetic nervous system, putting you into your rest and digest system. That's when more blood goes to our internal organs. When more blood goes to our internal organs, we're able to clean our body's systems better and re-regulate our endocrine system and reduce inflammation in our body. So that's a basic way that it works. And so for addiction, drugs, sugar, coffee, alcohol bind to our opiate receptor sites. And what one of the things, again, that really cool research is showing is that acupuncture releases on our endogenous endorphins, so our feel-good hormones, and those bind with those opiate receptor sites. And so it literally reduces addiction because your body is being nourished on those sites and having that effect of relaxation and that process. So to me, it works by binding with those receptor sites and by helping the body to detox more quickly.
So it's not like hypnosis or something where you get something cellular that reminds you, oh, I don't want to do this. It's more that you really don't need to do it because that's being met. Those needs are being met in a different way.
Yeah, it's a physiological effect. And, of course, like anything, that's happening while you're getting treated. I should look into the research. I wonder if there's been research done on how long they find that effect lasts for. Mm-hmm. Certainly, in general, people get benefits from treatment at varying degrees, and that benefit might show up at different times over a number of days or weeks or months even. Something like addiction, though, if I'm treating someone for cigarette addiction, for instance, I'll have them come in every day for about 5 days when they've actually stopped smoking to get them through that initial period of withdrawal. And so cravings.
It helps with the cravings.
And irritation and fatigue and all those, you know, signs of coming off of any drug withdrawal. So I've helped people come off of different pain medications or antidepressants or insomnia medications as well.
Oh, that's really, really excellent. That's so good for our listeners to know that there's some help for that, that really difficult period that people go through when they're trying to get off with something. That's great. And you know, I'm going to ask you about my particular area. I have sort of like a osteoarthritis. It's sort of like fibromyalgia, like achy.
Sure.
And I've found that acupuncture helps me with my back.
Good.
Shoulders sometimes. But why is that? How does it... It's almost like magic to me. How does that work?
Right. So it's that same response when your body... it reduces systemic inflammation, and it also increases circulation in the body in general. And then depending on what points we use, we can direct more circulation to certain areas. Sometimes if someone's having fibromyalgia and osteoarthritis and any sort of other historical injuries in the back or spine, it's helpful for reducing that pain. And again, acupuncture does a really good job of treating the body systemically. But again, if there's widespread pain in the body, there are good treatments for addressing that as well.
Mm. Yeah, and also along with that, I wanted to mention that for menopause, I was really helped by, it was a different acupuncturist at the time, but she also used something called Chinese herbs. Mm-hmm. And that really, really helped me get through the menopause. And I think that a pharmacist once said to me that those are what's called phytoestrogens. And so what is that?
Yeah, so Chinese herbal medicine is based on a very thorough and fantastic Materia Medica. And they map the phytochemicals in these herbs that treat people for things like that. And when you had brought up menopause, I was going to talk about Chinese herbs because that is one of those conditions that responds so well to a daily dose of a Chinese herbal medicine. And there's certain formulas that treat more for hot flashes or the insomnia parts of it or the emotional components of it. But they just help to kind of ease that transition or help the body to be functioning as optimally as possible in a new state. You know, so it's not like taking hormone replacement therapy that just is a big kick of hormones. It's something that works with where your body's at to kind of ease that disparity and help recalibrate your body to a new normal.
Yeah, that really worked for me. I was working in intensive care, so I had a lot of stress. And then that seemed like it really smoothed me out. So that's my testimonial about that. It really helped me get through that period of my life. But what do you want people to know besides what we've already covered? Because you probably have seen so many different kinds of clients. Who do you think that you've been able most effectively to be able to assist? What either diagnostic or type of person or men, women, children?
I'm smiling over here because one of the very most fun things about the practice is that it's such a diverse group of people as far as age. You know, like I treat anywhere from newborn infants up to, I think my oldest patient right now is 98. And so that's a big range of things that people are getting help for. When I first started practicing, maybe one of my favorite stories is a woman who came in with osteoarthritis in her back. She got one treatment and she came in the next week and she's like, look, I can touch my toes. So I think not underestimating how profound it is for someone to have relief from pain, maybe especially chronic pain. Chronic pain really erodes our brain function and our wellness and our energy. And so to give a person even an hour of relief from pain has been humbling to see happen time and time again. I'm a fairly healthy person. And so when I have, especially one of my chronic pain patients come in, they're like, I had, you know, an hour or three without pain. I'm like, that's great. And they're like, no, you have no idea. That was everything. Mm-hmm. And so if we can keep rewiring, working with the plasticity of our neural network I could talk for a long time about chronic pain, but if we can begin to rewire and work with the plasticity of your body, mm-hmm. And get you out of that pattern of chronic pain, that's huge.
Yeah, and I know my husband appreciated you because he went to you for his side effects of his chemotherapy, mm-hmm. and was really helped by that.
Right.
So there's so much to this, and we have to wrap up, but I want you to tell our listeners what your business is, where you are, how to reach you, in order to try you out. And there's many, many other wonderful acupuncturists in Chico, so we're not just promoting your practice over others, but tell us about yours.
Yeah, so my practice is Chico Community Acupuncture. We opened in 2010. We're on Mangrove Avenue, close to S&S Produce. We're open Monday through Saturday. There's another acupuncturist who works there as well. It's great if you can get a hold of us online, chicocommunityacupuncture.com, to schedule appointments. And the other thing I'll say is that refer your family to other acupuncture clinics across the country, and do that by checking out POCA, POCA, co-op, COOP.com. I'm wearing my POCA co-op shirt today, and that's our national cooperative of other community acupuncture clinics. It's a national movement. There's clinics in Israel and in Canada and other places in the world as well. And that's so important. So pocacoop.com.
Thank you, Olivia Peters-Lazaro, for coming in tonight on It's Your Body. We really appreciate that you could make
Chris.
It in.
Thanks.
Thank you. All right, thanks. Well, I just need to wrap up because kids are here and they're ready to do their show. I think it's peanut butter and jelly time. I hope I've got the right name for this show. And I want to thank our underwriters before I leave you. And that would include Charlotte Hall, owner of Hall Marketing and Design. Charlotte and her team help local businesses succeed and grow through marketing created to attract the right clients. Hall Marketing and Design is a full-service design group for brochures, ads, presentation materials, and signs. For a free consultation, call 895-9484 or visit hallmarketingdesign.com. And by A1 Brake and Alignment, specialists with over 20 years of experience in automotive care, A1 Brake and Alignment services all makes and models of cars, trucks, and off-road vehicles in all forms of automotive maintenance and repair, including air conditioning. A1 Brake and Alignment is located at 824 Nord Avenue and can be reached at 894-1111. 1-800-875-5149. Stay tuned for peanut butter and jelly time. I'm just going to play a heartbeat of music, and then they'll be right with you.